This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Petrovic flips the puck toward his own bench and goes over to console Casey DeSmith. The Edmonton Oilers pour onto the ice. They are the Western Conference champions for the second year in a row. It's Edmonton and Florida in the Stanley Cup Final.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Impressed that Peyton would know that.
I am stunned. I thought maybe he would know the Disturbed version, which is maybe the best cover of anything I've ever heard.
He knows this because of meme culture. This is meme culture. Like, this is social media videos playing this version.
It's the Friday edition of Sean and RJ here on DFW Sports Station. That is our Cowboys insider, Bobby Belt, with the Cowboys practice report at 6:20 this morning. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back. We are live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube as the Dallas Stars season comes to an end. 6-3, the final score, and this was 3-0, 6 minutes in. 5.5 minutes in, 5:36 to be exact, into this game. It was 3-0. Jake Ottinger pulled in the shortest stint of his career.
I mean, that's a quick hook, man. That is a quick hook. The discussion on whether it was the right call or not is a discussion for it's a different one on its own. It's its own discussion. But that was a very quick hook, and the Stars were, I mean, look, this game was as cooked as it possibly can get. 5 to 6 minutes in. They did their best to make a game of it. And make no mistake, they did make a game of it.
Yep.
But this was one of those, got down so fast, it was like, you know, I'm not even going to get to enjoy this.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it honestly, what it was reminiscent of to me was 94 NFC Championship game, where the 49ers come out and they score 21 points in like 4 minutes. You're like, okay, you've lost. Like, and they rally a couple different times, and every time they get kind of close, it's like, up, San Francisco scores again, and now puts a little more separation there. It was just, yeah, this felt over pretty quick, and every time you get some hope, it got stamped out pretty quick.
And we talk about Groundhog's Day with the Texas Rangers offense. This was Groundhog's Day for this game. A lack of quality shots on goal. And the third period lid was put on the Dallas Stars offense throughout the entire series. We talked about this the other day. In game three, 4 shots in the third period. The next game, 3 shots in the third period. Well, they had 2 shots in a 19-minute span last night. The shots that they took, I thought Ray Ferraro was pretty accurate. He's like, these are just like 50-foot easy saves. Yeah. And they couldn't even generate pressure with an empty net. It wasn't a couple scares. It's like, all right, buckle up. They might get one here. They didn't even come close. A total lack of offense, a total lack of attack.
Yeah, and then look, even when they did get, I mean, Edmonton did a really nice job blocking shots, making sure nothing got to Skinner at points in this game. It was very disappointing the entire series, the lack of attack that the Stars had. And I don't know if this is a matchup issue with Edmonton. I don't know if it's a lack of grit that they've got. I don't really know what the answer is right now, but it just like the whole season, you know, save for the last dozen games where they were kind of like mid, you know, this was one of the best teams in the league, and you get to the postseason and, you know, they were one of the best home ice advantages in the entire NHL, and in this series, in the 3 home games they played, they got beat in game 2. They got avalanched in game 5. And in game 1, it took a miracle to win. That's your home games in this series.
Yeah, the one thing Ferraro kept saying last night that I disagreed with, I think he was trying to be cliche, the Stars had the series slip through their fingers. He said that multiple times, slip through their fingers. No, that's not the case.
They were never the better
team. Slip through your fingers is a series that you had right there on the brink. As you just said, that was never the case. They're lucky they weren't swept.
Yeah, I mean, they essentially
game
lost.
Game one in the comeback, it ended up being a fluke and an aberration.
They lost the series 5-0, it felt like. Like, you did get that third period, but otherwise you got run, and it was over pretty quickly. Last night, it's like, I had almost sent something to the group text. We're watching the faceoff, and Colin Blackwell's there, and he immediately, right off the faceoff, like, falls face first in the ice. And I was like, that seems like a bad omen. This doesn't seem very good. And then it was super fast. You get the penalty. Then it's super fast, the goal. Then the second one comes second. It's like, oh, gosh. This feels like a team that, instead of what I was expecting yesterday, which I was certain we were getting a Stars win, was, oh, it's a team that'll come out. They'll show some fight. It was a team that looked like it didn't have a ton of fight early on.
No. After game one, my handicapper buddy, Bo, texted. He said, I just bet 11-1, Edmonton in 5.
Whoa.
And he was like, that was such a destruction of a game. I'm taking Edmonton in 5. He cashed out before the game last night.
Oh.
He took the cash out option. He still wound up winning 3-1 or whatever it was. But, like, that, it was, if you really wanted to look at it after game one, you're like, yeah, we saw what happened. We knew game one was the way it was set up. The way it happened, Edmonton they match up well. They're just better right now.
Let's go through the game before we get to the Jake Oettinger discussion at 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Franco LaFranco injury attorney text line. Pete DeBoer rolls the dice with Bork making his first career playoff appearance over Dadonov, which PK Subban in the intermission is like, you should have started Dadonov. He should be playing over Bork. Well, it's a Bork high stick. 2 minutes in, and that immediately zaps you. And Ferraro's like, this is a must-stop. This is an early must-stop for you not to go down 1-0. Connor McDavid, who had been a little bit quiet recently, sets up Perry for another tap-in, and it's 1-0. And we find out from the broadcast that Pete DeBoer said scoring first in this game was critically important.
Yeah.
It did not happen. That made them now trailing in 15 of their 18 playoff games. And, oh, by the way, trailing in every single game this series, Corey Perry.
Yeah, here's the issue with starting Bork. And I don't have an issue with it. Like, when you're down 3-1, like...
trying to spark?
Yeah, do you roll the status quo out there? Or do you make a change? Like, you know, like, find me a baseball manager down 3-1 in a series that doesn't make a lineup change. You know, your starting lineup is changing. Whether that means you flip the 3-4 hitters, whether that means you take the backup first baseman, throw him in there, whatever, right? You're looking for something. So, I get it. I'm not going to lose my mind over that because DeBoer's made enough moves where they've worked. And, you know, like, it's like, this. He knows his team better than we do. So, I'm not going to lose my mind over Bork over Dadonov. But that's a penalty you can't take right there.
And then a Kevin Love full court pass, a 95-footer. Sets up Janmark. I was like, "What? Offsides? Can we get a soccer call here? Like, what the hell? How is this pass completed?" And then right after that, two shots, two goals. Oettinger is pulled, but it was a 95-foot pass that I was like, "Oh my god!"
That's a pass that you couldn't make 20 years ago because you couldn't do a two-liner, and now you can, and you have been able to since the lockout where they lost the season in like 04, they've been able to do that.
Yeah, that was when hockey was like, oh my gosh, is hockey going to recover? And they had to make tweaks.
Yeah,
the
trapezoid behind the net and that. So it's always been allowed in the international game, but never in the NHL.
Is that really the reaction you need to have right there, though? Like, it's a power play goal one, and then the second one is essentially a breakdown. Like, why is it all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, Otter, you got to pull him out. He'd won before the last Edmonton game. It was 7 straight home games he had won.
Yeah, I think so.
Which we'll get to in a second. Wyatt Johnson then forces a turnover, and Robo continues to be red hot, scoring in his third straight. So then you have that. It's 3-1, and then the juice in the building. After a steal high stick where it looked like Kane acted a little bit, I wanted to see some actual contact with his helmet there. Harley almost scores. They kill the penalty. The crowd gets hype. And then the Bichelle hit. Oh, my God. He looked like he literally, like Shaquille O'Neal, picked up Underdog, their little producer on TNT, and picked up that Edmonton Oiler and threw him into the glass. And the place is losing their mind. And Sean McDonough is giving the AAC credit, even down 3-1 after the first period.
That was Arvidsson who went against the glass. And he's I mean, he's under 6 feet tall. Bischel's like 6'7". he's also like, he leads the team in hits this year.
It's like the difference between DeSmith and Otter size wise, which we'll get to in just 1 second.
But yeah, that was, I mean, look, they had to start hitting. They had to start doing stuff to get Edmonton off their game. And I'll say this, like Edmonton, you know, after the first goal, the first, I guess it was Robertson had the first goal. That was a bad clear job by Edmonton. They looked like there was a point in this game. There was a couple of points in this game where they forgot how to handle the puck. They forgot how to skate. They were turning it over. They were just very kind of careless with the puck. And the Stars took advantage of both of those opportunities. But it was just like, it was just too big of a hole.
Start of the second period, the Stars have an immediate power play to begin. What did they end up with? Zero shots on goal. On nothing but weak attempts. That's the power play that, poof, went right into the air. They had zero shots midway through the second, and then a flurry. Marchment with a whiff. Wyatt, Bork draws a penalty, and that ends up setting up Roppe from Wyatt. So it's 3-2, and then immediately after you get the... I don't know how Connor McDavid ended up with this puck.
Blocked by Ekholm. That'll lead to a breakaway for Connor McDavid. He's in and he scores! Connor McDavid drags it back to his forehand. And Edmonton has regained a two-goal lead in Game 5.
Was that off a deflection?
Yeah, so I think it was Kulak. There was a shot attempt, and he got his stick on it, and it deflected right out. And then, did you see the intermission at all? That at the second intermission?
Yeah.
When PK had the VR on,
yeah,
they detailed this play and they pointed out CC was outside the dots, and that puck kind of fluttered into the neutral zone, and McDavid, who is, I mean, nobody's got remotely close to the amount of 22.5 mile an hour.
And Roppe Hintz is fast, and Hintz was tracking him,
yeah,
and he still couldn't catch him.
Still couldn't catch him.
McDavid hits 20 miles per hour again, so just when it's 3-2, the roof is about to pop off the place. McDavid makes it 4-2, and it's that score after two.
And like, I'll tell you, the most surprised, what amazing balance by McDavid, too, as he got towards the net.
Yeah, he didn't even fall down after scoring.
I thought that's a fall down moment. I mean, he didn't even fall down. He had the puck control. That was just tremendous. But, I mean, yeah, that's just that was just bad luck.
Third period, Robo scores immediately. Here we go again. Skinner. Starting to get a little bit shaky. DeSmith had a bad goal that he let up. This was Skinner's. And Robo scoring 4 of the Stars' last 5 goals after he was scoreless in the first 8 games of the playoffs. It's 4-3, and then the bad luck hits with Kane going off Lindell's skate. 5-3. No more offense. No more shots. Over.
Yeah, both times you cut it down to a 1-goal lead, you spent 2 minutes there before Edmonton scored. And so, to me, like, this was something where every single time you're like, all right, they're building momentum. Because after the, especially when they cut it to 3-2, I felt like, all right, there's real momentum here. It feels like a real game at this point. And then instantly to get it sucked out. And then that second time, and for it to come off of just another bad bounce, that's where it was just like, this isn't your night. Yeah. This is going to end poorly.
And both times when they had cut it to 1, those goals to go back up 2, there was a lot of luck that was in those. The luck for the puck to go right to McDavid, and then the luck off the skate.
Yep.
I mean, those are just like, what are you going to do? When you got Connor McDavid on a breakaway, I mean, you had a backup goalie and a breakaway for the best part of the world. Like, just pray. Just pray.
Pete DeBoer on whether he was shocked that the series ended in 5.
And I'll tell you what I told our group. I think it's possible to be 2 things at the same time. I'm really proud of the resiliency of our group through the first 2 rounds. We scratched and clawed and found a way to beat 2 really good teams. You know, and I'm also disappointed, you know, that we didn't find another level, another gear here, another way. You know, getting back here to this point, how hard it is to get back here again. You know, and so, no, I would say I'm both those things. I think that's okay, you know, and I think our group needs to go and, you know, coaches, players, and reflect in the summer on what we can do better when we get to this point,
against the best teams. But there's no doubt the two best teams are playing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
For the cup.
And now the decision that everyone is talking about. Jake Ottinger pulled 7 minutes in. Was it the right call? And is Pete DeBoer, and should Pete DeBoer actually be in trouble? I want to take some Stars calls at 877-881-1053. Give us that hockey education, 877-881-1053. Did you agree with the goaltender switch? And should Pete DeBoer be on the hot seat? 877-881-1053, next.
Whistles a pass right side, Arvidsson to the net. Rich shot, score! Mattias Janmark extends Edmonton's lead to 2-0 in Game 5. The Oilers have 2 goals on 2 shots.
And that was the end of Jake Ottinger. 7 minutes in, Casey DeSmith would enter. He would give up a soft goal, and the Dallas Stars have their season end 6-3 at the hand of the Edmonton Oilers on Oilers Radio. Good morning, Metroplex. It's Sean, RJ, and Bobby live with the 6 a.m. Club. We got a little baby ticket giveaway to hook you up with during the 7 o'clock expressway, and Bobby will recap Cowboys practice at 6:40 next in Inside the Star. Shortest stint of his career, Pete DeBoer. Why did you do it? Because this response has Stars fans asking whether Pete DeBoer has started a war that you can never come back from, and whether this means one of the two has to go.
Well, anytime you pull a goalie, you know, the reasoning's always to try and spark your group. So that was the number one reason. We had talked endlessly in this series about trying to play with the lead. And obviously we were in a 2-0 hole right away. And you know what, I didn't take that lightly, and I didn't blame it all on Jake. But, you know, the reality is if you go back to last year's playoffs, you know, he's lost 6 to 7 games to Edmonton, and we gave up 2 shots on 2 goals in a, you know, an elimination game. So, you know, it was partly to spark our team and wake them up, and partly, you know, knowing that, you know, status quo had not been working, you know, and that's a pretty big sample size.
RJ Choppy, your thoughts?
I mean, he's not wrong that he's lost 6 of 7 to Edmonton. That's a factual statement.
It is a factual statement. Let me also follow up with the amount of, that's like, is that like Bruce Bochy saying,
yeah,
Mally, like, you're losing these games.
Yes,
a little bit. The Dallas Stars left a scar offensively. They scored 11 goals in the series over 5 games. I'll have to go back last year to see their offensive output, whether they were losing more high-scoring affairs. Your offense sucked. You know what? They sucked. So it's not just as simple as saying, well, he lost these games. Well, what did you guys do to help him on the scoreboard?
Right. I mean, look, the reality is in this series,
You scored five goals in your last 4 games, all losses.
Yeah, look, the reality also for Otter is in this series, he played 5 games, well, 4 games and 5 minutes in this series, right? His save percentage was under 935 in every single game. It was under 900 in the first 3 games of this series. I'm leaving out yesterday. When the first 4 games of the series, it was 935, 750, 880, 889. Like, that's just not like elite goaltending at all. And there's enough Stars fans who will say the dirty little secret is that he will come up small in some certain spots as the playoffs go on. I think he's tremendous. I think he's one of the better netminders in the game, but the problem here is And this is the issue that you're going to run into. This is where DeBoer was last night, and this is where Bochy is. This is where every manager in baseball is. You get to an elimination game. How long can you sit around and wait to see if it's not his night or if these were unlucky bounces? How long are you going to wait? Are you going to wait 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 25 minutes? Like,
yeah.
What's the point, right? Like, if it's the second inning and, you know, your pitcher has given up, you know, a couple of home runs, like, are you going to wait around for the third or are you going to pull him? That's the problem that these coaches run into, because it gets late early quick, you know. And
so it sounds like you're supporting the move.
I don't like support the move, but I don't want to criticize the move, because like what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to just let him. You're supposed to ride with him. If it's not his night, it's not his night. You know, it's not
okay. So how much blame do you put on him for the first two goals?
The second goal, man. The first goal's not his fault, right? Perry was right in front of the net.
Yeah.
The second goal, five hole like that, I don't know. I think Otter stopped that shot enough, you know, in his time. Would he have given up the first to Smith goal?
Right.
You know, I don't know. Like, that's a great question. You know, I don't know. When was the last time Casey played? April? you know, early April?
Bobby, what did you think in the moment?
I get wanting to change some things up, but again, like, you're talking about when Pete DeBoer goes up there after and he's talking to the media, it doesn't sound like just a simple, like, it's not his night question, because he went, you know, we've lost 6 out of 7 games. I don't want to say it's all Otter's fault.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, that just sounds like you're like, Otter, we lost because of Otter. That's what this, you sounded like you thought you've lost the last two series exclusively because of Jake Hotton.
I think there's two ways to look at it. And I think DeBoer messed up publicly by going to the second. So the two ways are, you're not playing well, or we need a spark.
Mm-hmm.
This was the fight. I thought Sean McDonough was going to go downstairs and fight Ray Ferraro, who's sitting right next to, you talk about the most uncomfortable broadcasting picture that we're going to see the entire year, as he's sitting there breaking down the move with Ottinger back from the locker room sitting right next to him on the bench. So you got spark in the team. You just have to be the whipping boy in order for us to do it. I can't pull everyone else on the ice, or you're not playing well. And I thought DeBoer, at least afterwards, even if he thought that Jake had been shoddy lately and not great, he could have just said, look, Jake was the easy move to make to spark everyone else. This is more about the entire team and not Jake. Instead, to Bobby's point, he walked over that line and went to more direct blame towards Ottinger. And I think that was a public mistake. Even if he felt that way, he could have just said, look, I needed to get everyone else going. And that could have been the beginning and the end of it. Ottinger is still our goalie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were tied at a point in time in the game, we were going to overtime. Jake Ottinger was coming back in. And we can have another discussion on the side as to whether it worked. Did it create a spark? We don't know whether the Stars started playing better and AAC got hype because of that move, but I thought Pete DeBoer messed up in the comment.
I just, and every sport's different, but still, like you could make parallels to other sports and just think about it. How would that be received? Imagine if at the end of the Packers playoff game a couple years ago, Mike McCarthy was like, look, I don't want to say it's all on Dak, but like the fact is Dak's lost 3 of his last 4 playoff games. Or if they go, I don't want to say it's all on Jacob DeGrom, but Jacob DeGrom's lost his last 4. Like if you were to like.
But we need to also, this is where we need Tolo knowledge. This happens in hockey more than.
Patrick Waugh, Marty
Your starting
Brodeur.
Quarterback is not getting pulled. Yeah,
no. Your starting pitcher analogy is the best one, because you are pulling the starting pitcher for a reliever whenever things go sideways in a game. But if you were to then shift the blame over to say, this pitcher has lost us the game, or even just say, although I don't know, maybe it is more apt to talk about a closer. Like you take a closer's role away, and you just go, the fact is he's blown 4 saves in a row. Like, I mean, the way we talk about Luke Jackson, I don't know. It seemed very.
It's probably more closer than starter.
A lot of the response I saw on Twitter last night from people was universal of just, one of them can't be back next year. DeBoer or Ottinger can't be back next year because you can't have them work together after he talked like that.
Let's hear from a couple. Go ahead,
John. Real quick. I don't know that this has any bearing on Pete's status for next year.
There's a lot of people last night who
are those people named Jim, and there's a last name Nil.
I mean, there's a. But Bissonnette was talking about it on Twitter. He was like, "Wow, okay." You had a bunch of different hockey analysts last night replying to the Spit and Chicklets clip of it or whatever else, who were all saying like, "That feels like somebody's gone."
Let's hear from one of our top Tolos. He showed up in his Stars gear to the Mansfield Firehouse Tour last Friday. K-Twiz, you're live on the Fan. What do you think?
Good morning, fellas. I think, honestly, it was a coward move by the board to pull Otter so early, because what happened mere seconds later when DeSmith came in, he was scored on. It made it 3-0, and that completely took the crowd out of it completely last night at AAC. But I also think that there's one problem I think that the Stars do have that hasn't really been addressed. I think it's a culture issue, it's physicality. Mm-hmm. Yes, Carolina did get bounced, you know, the other night by Florida, but all three teams in this final four that we had were all physical. Dallas was not physical against Edmonton almost hardly at all in these five games. And to be a, not necessarily an Otter advocate, someone needs to remind DeBoer that Otter saved Dallas against Winnipeg and single-handedly beat them to get us to the Western Conference Finals. So, yeah. I don't know, but like y'all said, one of them has to go, you know, and DeBoer in the last 7 years hasn't gotten past round three and missed the playoffs once. So I'm not sure what needs to be done, but it'll be a fun offseason, that's for sure.
Thanks for the call, brother. Appreciate you. I put up the poll question last night in the first intermission. Should Jake Ottinger have been pulled? 53% said yes, we needed a spark. 46 and change, no, overreacted too soon. So it was close there.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to say it was an overreaction because it was 5 minutes in, yeah, I was quick hook. I mean, every goalie out there that you can find, Hasek, Waab, Brodeur, all the greats, they've all been pulled in a playoff game. But they don't generally get pulled this quick. They also don't generally give up 2 goals in 5 minutes. Right to start the game.
Yeah.
So it's like if you give them 2 or 3 goals throughout the first period, then you come out and maybe you get pulled. But I mean, yeah, we can hindsight it, and I probably would have done it. But it did work to spark them a little bit.
I agree.
A little bit. How much of that was Edmonton was up 3-0 and they were like, hey,
yep,
we're not making dumb penalties. We're not going to be aggressive. We're going to lay back.
And it didn't seem like he was terrible outside of the one soft goal. DeSmith.
No, it didn't.
He made some stops. He got lucky with the one between his legs where he was sprawled out with the cane wraparound. Yeah. I understand. Again, this is where I want your hockey knowledge on the Fantex. I understand you have to be the victim for everyone else. I got to make an example out of you. You just got to be the fall guy. That's it. Hey, the rest of these guys are not going to have any type of uplifting energy. It's clear until we create some type of buzz in this arena and crowd and everyone knows, all right, this S is real. So I understand it from that standpoint. I do think it worked a little bit for a spark. I just think Pete messed up with the explanation, and I don't know how forgiving Jake Ottinger is going to be.
Chuck Cooperstein, all-knowing sports czar, tweeted yesterday. He said, so how exactly do Pete DeBoer and Jake Ottinger move forward from here? Never a good thing in any sport when your coach and most important player are on the outs with each other. And a lot of the commentary you saw last night was like, even if they are both back this year, there's got to be a talk between the two of them this offseason. Say, sure. All right, what are we here? And what am I to this organization?
Well, this is where hockey historians can let us know, because goaltenders get pulled. How often does it happen with the bounce back? You know what I mean? Where you have someone established, they have to have their feelings hurt, but they come back. I mean, Skinner was getting ready to not be their goaltender 2 series ago.
Well, he literally did get pulled.
He got pulled.
Picard came in and he played, what, half a dozen games?
I'd love to know a history project of how many times the bridge was burned. Or, hey, it's hockey, it happens, and you can cross back over.
So universally, like what I saw and what I've looked up and just seen different analysis on was people are just saying that the biggest difference here is just Otter's still considered generally a top 5-7 goalie, and top 5-7 goalies don't generally get pulled 5 minutes into an elimination game. is that the context of one of those guys, Hasek can get pulled in game three if he's getting worked, or Brodeur or somebody else like that. And obviously Ottinger's not those guys. But like, that's generally not happening in an elimination game and not coming back.
All right, back to the Stars with Jake Reedman at 7 o'clock as the season ends at the hand of the Oilers. And we have a Stanley Cup rematch. But Bobby was out for everything that happened. A loaded day at the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco for Cowboys OTAs. We take you inside the Star like nobody else after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good morning, Metroplex. Shout out to the 6 a.m. Club. Sean and RJ trying to get you to the weekend as quickly as possible. Jake Rietma in studio. He was at the AAC last night to talk Stars at 7. A little baby ticket giveaway during the Expressway, and another one in the 9 o'clock hour. Our Cowboys insider, Bobby Belt, was in Frisco yesterday for Cowboys practice.
Let's turn on my mic first. Let's talk about the headline coming out of yesterday for me, which was Joe Milton. Joe Milton was a guy that I think the two things we were talking about yesterday that we were most interested in seeing were Joe Milton, and I know, Sean, you mentioned Jaden Blue, who Jaden Blue was working with the second team. I didn't see him getting any first team reps. These practices are hard to judge with running backs because there's no contact. And so you can't bring guys to the ground, and they'll always run the play out. So it's like, all right, would you have really slipped through that and wiggled through that and broken that run, or was it just that's the nature of the practice? But Joe Milton was going to be fairly easy to figure out, all right, how's he looking right now? He was much better than he was last week. He still feels at times like he's getting frazzled by how fast things go. Like, I think the very first snap he took, you saw him, like, you saw his eyes kind of dart around, and then he's just kind of panic throwing it to the sideline. But settled down, made a few really nice throws. There were, like, two or three throws over the middle of the field, 15, 20 yards down the field, that were just lasered in between, like, defenders swiping their hands along the path of the ball. He looked really good throwing the ball yesterday, and you heard some positive things coming out of the organization from Schottenheimer and others yesterday about just like, yeah, Joe's coming along pretty well, and these practices are getting better for him. And yesterday it looked like it.
Nick Harris said much more consistent day from Milton compared to last week. Had him charted at 7 for 8. Highlight came on a 40-yard pass to Ryan Flournoy for a touchdown. Will Greer was 3 for 3. And
Joe Milton throws 40-yard passes left-handed. I'm surprised he was able to throw only 40 yards.
And Brian Schottenheimer accidentally created a headline for the quarterbacks from some dumbasses out there, which maybe will be nominated for worst take at 9 a.m. when he was asked, is Joe Milton still a developmental quarterback?
I think they all are. I mean, I think Dak is in the developmental phase, and that sounds crazy for a guy that's played that much, but like there's things that we're tweaking with Dak, you know, so I don't think it's just for Joe. Joe is a guy that we obviously know all about the talent, but, you know, the system that he came from in Tennessee, you know, created some challenges in terms of just what he has to learn and things like that. But the minute these quarterbacks think that they've figured it all out, that's when it's probably time for them to think about doing something different, because the way defenses attack in this league, it makes it almost impossible to ever relax.
Who asked, by the way, if Joe Milton is developing? Like, duh.
Yeah. Well, it was our buddy, Mr. First Question, Calvin Watkins. But his first question was asking about, in general, they were talking about...
Follow me, Calvin. I could have DM'd you not to do that.
They're talking about backup quarterbacks. And Shotta gave a really long answer about that. And so it was just a follow-up of just like, okay, so you would still put him as, not necessarily like, a backup ready to go. He's developmental. And that's when Shotta came back with it. The idea that this is anything, because there were a few different places yesterday where people were like, oh my gosh, listen to how Schottenheimer's talking about Dak. What an error. You may have heard some of those takes at 5:25 this morning, leading into snacks. But the idea that, like, to me, I don't see how anybody can hear anything other than clear cover for Joe Milton.
They didn't hear it. They read it.
That's it. That's exactly it. They read the quote, and then they just, they went, oh my gosh, look, he's talking about Dak. No, that is clearly a, hey, we're all still learning. We're all still learning, guys. And they didn't want to throw Joe under the bus, it sounded like, too much by saying he's really far behind because of where he came out of. We had talked about that leading up to the draft. The Tennessee system is screwing some of these guys coming out.
Choppy.
Where people feel like Heupel's system is just, it's not making them pro ready.
Sorry, our coach is just better.
Yeah, except when you're playing top tier teams, I guess, at the end of the
well,
year.
Well, yeah, when Connor Stallions is going and giving up all the secrets. Look, this is a nothing. Even if they listen to the quote, it's still a nothing. Let me ask you this. Does Patrick Mahomes work on things in the offseason?
Yes.
Okay. Is he working on them to get better, or is he just, you know, wasting time?
Right. Yeah.
So then he's developing.
This is all the pursuit. That's exactly what Shoddy's trying to say. It's two questions back to back that make it sound like, boy, can Joe Milton even function on a football field?
Yeah.
And Shoddy's trying to say, look, even the guys who were really comfortable and the guy we're paying $60 million to, the guy who is a multi-time Pro Bowler that we consider our franchise quarterback, that guy is still developing.
They all are. Yeah. They're all,
and he said, if you don't think you're developing anymore, you need to retire. Brady was tweaking things his entire career.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, it's,
remember Michael Jordan worked on something every offseason.
Every offseason. Like, you know.
Stupid. Desperation. Headline horror. Yes.
Headline horror.
Was it USA Today? I like to call people out.
USA Today is the one that had written specifically about it, which that's 100%. You looked at a quote because they said Cowboys head coach talking about Dak Prescott like a rookie is unnerving.
I love
you. You read the Twitter quote and decided got to hit my quota. Got to hit my article quota. Let's go on a rant about this. But just like, oh my gosh, Cowboys fans, so sorry. You have somebody who thinks your quarterback is a rookie, handles him with kid gloves. It's like, no, stop.
I love USA Today to this day. I mean, it was perfect. Yeah. It's the cliff notes of sports, of news.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to make it look seem like they're smarter than you and use these big words. It's basically it's a coloring book. Very short articles, my kind of thing, you know, like four paragraphs and an extra sentence.
This is one of the quotes from it. If these are the kind of sound bites we're going to get from Schottenheimer before he coaches a single game, imminent disaster assuredly will descend upon Dallas. You melodramatic clickbait artist.
Melodramatic.
Who's the name of this person? I know it's not Jared Bell.
No. This is, his name is Robert Zaglinski.
Okay.
Is his name.
Mark that down, Ted. Put him on the no-go list, Mr. Carper.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, that was, in general, yesterday, I thought a lot of the discussion about the quarterbacks from Schottenheimer was interesting. He had a lot of good stuff on that. Dak, we didn't see as much of that. They're working through a lot of different things. I saw somebody ask Nick on Twitter, like, should we be concerned that the deep passing game isn't there? Like, is this Schottenheimer's conservatives? And no, it's like, no, guys. Like, this is literally just you're working through some things. There were a couple of drops yesterday. Schoonmaker had one. CD had one down the sideline deep during team period that was a kind of an interesting moment. So he dropped it, and then he goes to the sideline, and he starts trying to knock out some push-ups. And I had never seen this before. I don't think anybody of the media out there had ever seen this before. When he gets down to do the push-ups, like, George Pickens sprinted over and got down next to him and did all the push-ups with CD and knocked him out.
Their energy fell in love with that.
Their energy, they're buddies. They're tight. Like, they really get along really, really well.
Schottenheimer was asked, has there been any moment that has stood out with your new wideout?
I think, number one, he's doing an incredible job picking up the system. I talked about his intentionality last week, I believe, just how hard he's working. But there was a play, and it really wasn't anything George did. But we're in the red zone, and we're in kind of a spread formation. We hit him for a touchdown. Joe did on a little a bender, like a little skinny post, down in the low red zone. And CD was on the other side, and when CD broke out and he looked back to see where the ball went and he saw George in the end zone, he kind of dragged his toes up. CD was like, yes! So I think his excitement for knowing that we've added some pieces, which will add to the competition, it was cool to see a guy like CD be excited. And those two guys' relationship is awesome. I'm sure you guys have probably done stories on it, but they're spending a lot of time together. I think it's great for CD to have someone like George, not that George is a young player, but someone that GP really looks up to in CD. They obviously have trained some together, but that relationship's really cool. And I'm enjoying kind of just sitting back and watching it develop. And the two of them getting together and spending time with Junior Adams. And it's it's been really cool and fun for me to watch just how it all is beginning to fit together.
My five-year-old son is dying for my daughter to grow up faster. So he has like a running mate, yeah. And she's one because he wants like a playmate 24/7. CeeDee Lamb sounds like he got a friend.
Oh, he looks...
CeeDee Lamb got a buddy.
These two practices, he has looked like giddy, like he's bouncing around the field. And maybe that's just he's happy to be back on the football field. He's got his quarterback back. Like there could be a number of things, but a lot of it does feel like he's excited that George Pickens is here. He thinks this is going to lead to more opportunity for him. It's going to lead to better opportunities for the offense. It better lead to improvements on the offense. Otherwise,
well, here's the thing I'm taking from it. I know you can't double everyone in coverage and all that. I'm going to use CeeDee Lamb's personality to gauge George Pickens. Do you feel that CeeDee Lamb is a good dude, Bobby?
Yes.
Okay. So what I'm going to be looking at, if CeeDee Lamb feels good enough to interact and socialize and be tight with George, that's going to make me feel better that George Pickens isn't this bad dude, this poisonous cancer. That's the way I'm looking at it. It's like, oh, that person thinks that person is worth their time to hang out and be doing all this stuff with and be all lovey-dovey. Maybe George Pickens ain't so bad after all. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, as much as culture has been emphasized and underlined, that what Pickens did yesterday, like going over there and knocking out the reps, it's such a little thing. But like that's the kind of stuff Shoddy wants to see. Like that's the stuff that he wants to see from the guys and the type of relationships that they have. And he's somebody who I think universally you've heard from people. George Pickens is kind of like the guy who's a little difficult in class. Like students love him, but like his peers love him. He can be kind of a pain at times for the authority.
For the teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a class clown. He's got the class clown. I'm not saying he's a class clown, but that's what he is in class. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, like, but you're right. I mean, the students do find that person entertaining and funny.
Your son.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And we get emails. So the kids love him, but we get the emails because the teachers don't. They think he's a punk.
877-881-1053 to hit us up on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line before Jake Rietma talks Stars in studio.
Positive day of practice also for Jalen Brooks and Jonathan Mingo. It's back-to-back practices here where I've seen Mingo and like noticed him and had him flash a little bit, which is encouraging. I'm going to be interested to see how they play out that back end of it with Turpin, Tolbert, and Mingo. Because I think for everybody, they clearly look, all right, Turpin's a guy who is kind of specific to the slot. Tolbert is a former third-round pick who they've started talking better about. And Mingo didn't look very good. So I think for a lot of people, they go, clearly that's Tolbert. And then Turpin in spots, and then Mingo's an afterthought. They really, really like Jonathan Mingo. And they really think that he can be somebody who can contribute for them. And look, he showed a decent job blocking in the run game. That's going to be something that'll help him get on the field. And if he picks up the passing game a little bit and develops, you know, a connection with Dak, that's going to be big for getting him on the field, and he might start pushing reps for Jalen Tolbert. But
I really like Mingo.
Yeah, no, they really believe in his upside, and they think he can still tap into. They think they bought in on a player that Carolina gave up on too quickly. That's what they think.
All right, we're live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. More Cowboys throughout the entire show. We got a little baby ticket giveaway that we want you to win. In the Expressway, the 7 o'clock Expressway, since you are part of the 6 a.m. club, it is over, and it could be the end of not just the Dallas Stars, but Jake Rietma in studio. What did he think of the Otter move? What does this team need to add? And is Pete DeBoer in trouble? Rietma in studio, back from the AAC next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.